This is Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Only on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. Support for Faith Matters is brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine. Now, here are your hosts, Ryan Price and David Cruz.
Welcome to Faith Matters. I'm Ryan Price along with David Cruz on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts. And we are sitting here today in the studio with Beth Pratt, who is the former religion editor of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal for 25 years and is someone who has had a community presence both in writing and in speaking, and just someone who is well known to many readers and community citizens, not only here in Lubbock, but throughout the entire region. Welcome to you today, Beth.
Thank you.
Welcome, Beth. We've had some terrific guests on Faith Matters over the last few months, and this is no exception. We're really honored and delighted to have you with us.
Thank you.
Ryan, I'd like to start by referencing Beth's columns that she writes still to this day for the Avalanche Journal. They're some of the most interesting writing, I think, in certainly our local paper. And recently, Beth wrote a column where she talked about spiritual drought. Now, we all know we've been in this drought for the last several years because of the lack of moisture and rainfall. And you certainly mentioned that in the column that you wrote, Beth, your weekly column that appears usually on Saturdays. But I was struck by the column recently where you mentioned spiritual drought, and you compare that to the drought that our land is in. What is spiritual drought? Talk a little bit about that.
Well, having grown up on the farm, I know very well what drought is and its impact on people. I used to, as a child, watch for the clouds, and I grew up in the 50s drought. My dad in the 30s, and I knew all the stories. And drought means a lack of life, basically. You cannot live without water. You cannot live without the water of the Spirit, in my opinion. Not abundantly, anyway. And so I would say that's probably the best comparison I could make.
You also mentioned about how the crops that are produced during spiritual drought aren't necessarily good crops. And I understood that to mean some of the modern moral choices that people make, and that even from your point of view, that churches all too often don't tell people what they need to hear, but rather they tell them what they want to hear, kind of to go along with modern day morality and choices that lead ultimately to spiritual drought. What were you thinking as you wrote that?
I've been reading a lot of history, both American history. I'm still in reading the history of New York City, which is a microcosm of the country. I think speaks very much to where we are today. And I have been reading Old Testament. I've been teaching Old Testament. And invariably, I have to say to the class ever so often, this is right out of today's headlines. And I said, the sins haven't changed, folks, nor have the people. The way we look at them has changed.
I was just thinking, I made a list, Beth, of some recent columns, that the headlines which ran that, from columns that you've written. And one of them was headline. You may not be in charge of the headlines, but it speaks to article's about. Biblical characters easily recognized in today's daily lives. What I see in your columns is often kind of a comparison between wisdom and folly.
Yes.
I see that as a theme that you write with and perhaps strongly live with. And I think a certain degree of wisdom comes out in your writings. But you see, you kind of live with this tension of the modern, today, present, 21st century life, but then also through the prism of some of the great stories of Scripture, and then also through the lens of history.
Well, and I think I'm learning as time goes by and having a little more time to think now, but I'm learning that we have a tendency to dismiss history, and particularly Old Testament stories, as, well, that doesn't apply. They didn't do things like we do things today. And I guess the thing that has hit me is that they did things exactly like we do them today, and we haven't invented anything new in human behavior. And yes, the technology is very different, and we have some wonderful opportunities with technology that didn't exist then. But we also have the opportunity to spread the bad things as well as the good things, and we're seeing that day after day. And it's going to always be, I guess, a problem for us. But wisdom is not built, I don't believe, on not knowing what's gone before. And to me, it is frightening that the people, too many people I come in contact with, do not know history.
You mentioned in the course of our conversation just a moment ago about sin, and I'm sure over the years you've written many things around the issue of sin and even how the different religions of the world view sin and the consequences of sin. What is the expression, hate the sin but love the sinner? What does that mean to you?
Well, first, I probably would define sin a little differently. I think when I was growing up in a Baptist church, you know, there were three additional commandments. Thou shalt not drink, thou shalt not dance, and thou shalt not smoke.
Those aren't any of the Catholic commandments.
Those weren't so. In the, yes, and I found out, I know I dropped by the diocese one day, and when Bishop Sheehan was here, and now Archbishop Sheehan, and he was having a birthday recognition, and they handed me a glass of wine. And I can't drink on the job, so I don't recall whether I probably didn't drink it. But I like to give the Baptists a hard time about that. Really was wine that Jesus made. And so we have some rather infantile attitudes about what sin is.
Hold that thought, because Ryan and I want to continue on this train of thought when we return from our break.
You are listening to Faith Matters on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts.
You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts with your hosts Ryan Price and David Cruz, brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ryan Price along with David Cruz, and we are sitting here today with Beth Pratt, who is the former religion editor at the Lubbock Avalanche Journal and continues with a weekly column at the AJ. And Beth, before the break, we were talking about sin and wisdom, folly, and what this word that's often used, maybe casually, you were saying you may have a different understanding of the word sin than maybe what we use in common parlance.
Yes, I've been telling my Sunday school class for a number of years, there's a difference between the little s and the big s. Sins, the things that we do that hurt someone, the wrong, anything we do to hurt someone is sin. Anything that harms our bodies, it is in a sense a sin against our bodies. And so there are all these things that none of us live perfect lives, and we certainly do commit those kinds of sins. In our thoughts, we categorize sin, big sin, little sin. And sometimes churches do. I know the Catholics have some differences in what's this kind. And I think possibly to get at some of that issue maybe. But sin, the big sin, is the problem that the people, the Israelites, had all through the Old Testament, and that was running after other gods. That is the big sin, big S. We do that in different ways. Now, we think, oh, we don't worship stone idols. Well, you know, into my office one day, a lady walked, and I had worn a crystal around mine. I have a purple piece of rock that I just really thought was pretty, and I bought it, and I put it on a chain and wore it to work. And this lady looked at that and thought that I was into crystals. Now, I do know there's part of some people's thinking that your spiritual life is affected by crystals, and or it could have been horoscopes, or it could have been any number of things. But that made me sit up and think. Now, that woman got the wrong idea of who I am, because that certainly wasn't who I am. I wore it for its cosmetic effect. Now, it was misleading for me to wear that, apparently, at least in her case. So I quit wearing that to work. It's not that I think it's wrong to wear it, but I still think it's pretty, and I wear it to church because my people know what I think.
You're not causing your sister to stumble.
Exactly.
That's the old biblical language
for
that.
And that's exactly a lot of what we preach about.
David, you were Beth was talking about differences in sin, and in the Bible there is a distinction between mortal and venial sin. But then there's also kind of what you're getting at, this root cause, which is a kind of idolatry, sometimes of the self, a brokenness, a fractured relationship, and we chase after other things to what I would say fill the void. In the understanding of sin, mortal and venial, in the Bible, but at the same time, we do know there's a certain practicality that it's true that there are certain things that are small and certain things that can really mess you up. How do you know the difference? When do you say, this is right, I've got to die on this hill, versus, okay, I can give that a pass? Does that make sense?
There's a thing that people need to know about the Ten Commandments. I think the idea, at least growing up in Sunday school, and most people kind of get the Sunday school version, and I'm speaking here of children, of what's right and wrong. And sometimes we don't go beyond that as adults. And if we don't, then we stumble over a lot of things that really are small things. And sometimes we embrace things that really are big things because we haven't really sat down and understood what the Bible teaches us. And the commandments were God's way of saying, here is a way to live a good life. Any of those commandments broken are going to break relationships and cause serious problems in society. That's the second half, the relationship, the first relationship with God. And then the next half addresses our relationships with one another. And it's just common sense. It was just it's a guide that shows us how we can live a better life. Doesn't make us perfect. We don't keep them perfectly, but that is something I think would help us if we sat down and really thought that through. And as to how I think about it, I think I have this little thing in my head that goes off when, just like that crystal, it would never have occurred to me. Suddenly it occurred to me, I'm misleading someone, and I don't intend to do that. And so I took action. I don't say that you should or shouldn't. That's your call. Do you know, it also tells us that, I think it was Paul who said that if we know something causes our brother to stumble and we do it anyway, then that for us is sin. Or if we think what we are doing, for example, if I thought it was a sin to drink a glass of wine, I wouldn't drink a glass of wine. I don't do it anyway because my esophagus doesn't get along with it. But nevertheless, it makes a difference.
I had asked you before we went on break, and we're coming up against another break here in just a moment. But I think given this conversation, I think you and Ryan both make great points about the subject. I had asked you about, what does the expression hate the sin but love the sinner mean? And I think when we return, I'd like to explore that subject, because I think it will lead us into some really profound questions.
You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts.
This is Faith Matters on 89.1, Lubbock's Voice of the Arts, hosted by Ryan Price and David Cruz, and brought to you by Covenant Health, where faith meets the future of medicine.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. We are sitting here with Beth Pratt, who is the former religion editor of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal and continues to write a weekly column for the AJ on Saturdays. And before the break, David, you were venturing into interesting territories, and I know that you have a question for Beth.
Right. The expression that we often hear, hate the sin but love the sinner. What does that mean? Because on the one hand, one might interpret that to mean if I love a person whose behavior I have a disagreement with, okay? I disagree with the behavior and the way that maybe they're living out their morality. One might argue, well, how can I love that person? Am I not then giving approval to the behavior? So it's a touchy issue. And of course, Jesus says, love everybody. Don't just love the good. The sun shines on the good and the bad. So what's your take on this?
First, I think that's kind of bumper sticker religion, that phrase. And I'm always cautious about using, I don't use those phrases myself much because I think it trivializes.
You mean hate the sin and love the sinner.
Uh-huh. Now, also, I'm not the preacher, and it took me a while as a columnist to find my voice because I was very aware that I'm not the theologian. I am just an ordinary person and speaking of faith. And I had a father who taught me to ask the questions, ask the hard questions. And we'd come home from those little country church sermons from the college students about thou shalt not drink, smoke, and dance. And he'd say, well, it doesn't say that. He's a Baptist deacon. It doesn't say that in the Bible. Always read it for yourself. Don't take someone else's word for it. So I like to go a little deeper, but about love, but you're right. Love, the Bible does teach us to love everyone. My rule, and mine got a little broader than that when I embraced all the religious community of Lubbock. Now that I had to think that through. How do I do that and be honest? Because I really hate to hear people pander to a religion that I know they don't believe in and that they have maybe even said bad things about. I hate pandering, and so I do not want to ever do that. I want to be honest about differences. I want to be up front. The one rule is you must always respect the person because the person is made in the image of God, and I don't care what religion they claim, the person is made to me in the image of God. So I must always treat that person with the respect that I would prefer that they treat me. I don't require that they agree with me. It does not bother me when they disagree with me. I will argue the case, although I think you have to be careful arguing religion because I don't think it's a topic that lends itself well to argument. It lends itself to discussion. But yeah. Argument is a kind of brings up the anger issue. We do have, because we feel these things really deeply, but to love someone is to respect them. Now, when I correct my children, did I quit loving them if they did something wrong? Of course not. Does God quit loving us if we do something wrong? Some people think so. Not true. He gave himself. He paid the penalty for us. How can we say that he doesn't love us? He does. That's one of the key teachings of the gospel. You are loved. We have trouble learning that sometimes, I think, because we do misunderstand. How do you love someone? And you did mention the one of the moral issues of the day is the same-sex marriage issue for the church. How does the church address that? Well, I can't answer for anyone's church, but I can say that I have had relatives who were gay, and I didn't stop loving them. I didn't stop treating them the way I'd always treated them. It just... And I am really sorry today that I didn't discuss it with them because I think they needed that. But at the time, we were told not to because a doctor actually told us the man would be suicidal. He was afraid if he knew the family knew. Well, you know, nobody had to tell me. I knew. But I also knew he had a partner. But the love part of it didn't really, it just never occurred to me that I should not love the person. I have friends that are gay that, you know, I love them. I don't.
And yet,
I can't tell them this is the right way to live. I know that there are a lot of problems with this lifestyle.
Beth, I think that's wonderfully put, wonderfully stated. I couldn't agree more. But I sigh a little bit because what I see believers of all different kinds of religions is that they have no difficulty in condemning, but the struggle is truly in loving. And because somebody I disagree with is living in a way that I believe to be morally objectionable, that does not mean then that I'm free to discard that person. I still must love them, at least from my perspective, from my point of view. And that's where I believe our struggle lies, is not necessarily the approval of certain behaviors or certain morality, but the loving piece, because we so easily condemn people. And that, I think, is a real issue.
Well, the statement I made this Sunday, I said something about the list of sins, and it brought up the homosexual marriage issue just briefly in passing. I said, you don't pick out sins and say which ones you can't have in the church, because they're all there, because we are human beings. The sins that we commit are all there. I mean, the same passage in Romans that says homosexuality is wrong also says gossip is wrong. And, you know, okay, do we have any gossips here, I ask? Mm. And, you know, it is a difficult thing. It doesn't mean we approve of any of those. And adultery, we know that's wrong.
12 states now in the United States, as we're airing this program, have passed laws that permit same-sex marriage. And we were talking about the implications of the issue in the church world and the faith world.
I do not think that we will ever totally resolve that issue because it is an issue of church and state. The church is not to be under the direction of the state, and some are going that way, and I think that's a really slippery slope. We already see it in Canada where some parts of the Bible are considered hate speech and you can be arrested. It's just two separate entities as far as I'm concerned. The state may have an interest in approving this marriage. In Mexico, for example, you do not get married in just the church. You get married at the state. You have to get the state permission, and then you have to get the church permission if you're Catholic. Mm-hmm. So, and I have a son who married in the Catholic Church in Mexico and married in the courthouse in Lubbock. And I stood up at both weddings. That to me has a lot of issues of legality quite apart from the moral issue. And I don't believe that the state should ever be in the business of telling the church what's moral.
I think our listeners would love to hear more of this interview with Beth Pratt, but for the time being, we're going to start bringing this to a close. But I'm just delighted to be able to speak to Beth for a lot of reasons, and I'm looking forward to continuing this dialogue.
Me too, and the good news is Beth will be back with us next week at 5 o'clock to continue this conversation. You've been listening to Faith Matters on 89.1 Lubbock's Voice of the Arts.